Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Roll up your sleeves. Kids' turn arrives for COVID-19 shots. Hugs with friends, birthday parties indoors, pillow fights. School children who got their first COVID-19 shots Wednesday said these are the pleasures they look forward to as the U.S. enters a major new phase in fighting the pandemic. Health officials hailed shots for kids aged 5 through 11 as a major breakthrough after more than 18 months of illness, hospitalizations, deaths, and disrupted education. Kid-sized doses of the Pfizer BioNTech vaccine cleared two final hurdles Tuesday, a recommendation from CDC advisors, followed by a green light from Dr. Rochelle Walensky, director of the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention. At a Decatur, Georgia pediatrician's office Wednesday, 10-year-old Mackenzie Olson took off her black leather jacket and rolled up her sleeve as her mother looked on. "I see my friends, but not the way I want to. I want to hug them, play games with them that we don't normally get to, and have a pillow fight with her best friend," Mackenzie said after getting her shot at the Children's Medical Group site. With the federal government promising enough vaccine to protect the nation's 28 million kids in this age group, pediatricians, offices, and hospitals began inoculating children, with schools, pharmacies, and other locations planning to follow suit in the days ahead. Brian Giglio, 40, of Alexandria, Virginia, brought his 8-year-old son Carter in for vaccination at Children's National Hospital in Washington, D.C., where kids with underlying conditions got first dibs. Carter has type 1 diabetes that puts him at risk for complications if he were to become infected. Carter is the last in our house to get vaccinated, and he was always the one that we had the most concern about, Giglio said. "And for today, it's like a hallway pass for us to begin living life again, and we couldn't be more thankful to everybody that's been involved in this process to helping us feel that freedom that we feel today." Carter said he can't wait to leave masks behind once he's fully vaccinated, so he can smell the things he used to be able to smell without it. "I'm ready to trash it," he said. Though the CDC still recommends masks in schools and indoor public spaces where virus activity is high, even for the fully vaccinated. Kate Ziegler, a mom, 10, was first in line Wednesday for a drive-through vaccination at Viral Solutions in Atlanta. The girl bounded around the car in excitement before the shot, which she broadcast live on her computer during morning announcements at her elementary school. Afterward, Kate said she was very, very, very excited and very happy, looking forward to hugging her friends and celebrating her birthday indoors next month, instead of having a freezing cold outside birthday party. Hartford Hospital in Connecticut vaccinated 7 youngsters Tuesday night, minutes after CDC's director gave the okay, and 3 more early Wednesday. Mostly staffers' children, the kids were waiting for the CDC announcement, said Eric Arlia, senior pharmacy director at Hartford Healthcare in Connecticut. One girl squeezed her eyes shut and a boy barely flinched as they got their shots, and other waiting kids applauded. Local media video showed, "It feels like another important step on the journey to being able to vaccinate as many people as we can and put the pandemic to an end," Arlia said. The vaccine, 1/3 the dose given to older children and adults, and administered with kid-sized needles, requires 2 doses 3 weeks apart, plus 2 more weeks for full protection. That means children who get vaccinated before Thanksgiving will be covered by Christmas. "The timing before winter holidays is very fortunate," said Dr. Jennifer Hsu, whose Children's Medical Group office in Decatur, Georgia, began vaccinating first thing Wednesday. "This age group will be able to spend holidays with friends and family more safely than they have been able to since the start of the pandemic." Sarah Kerr's children, age 6 and 7, are Hsu's patients, and she hopes to get them vaccinated by week's end. Her kindergartner son has a chromosome disorder, receives special education, and is at risk for severe illness if he got infected, Kerr said. My son, who can't wear a mask and has been fully dependent on those around him to protect him, it will give him a line of defense. Kerr said, my daughter has had to sit out on some social things because we've had to be so careful for his sake. She's been so understanding, but it has been hard on her. Obituary, Annie Bell Tucker, Denver City, Texas. Graveside service for Annie Bell Tucker, 98, will be held 11 a.m. Friday, November 5th, at Denver City Memorial Park with brother Skip Rogers officiating, with services under the direction of Ratliff Funeral Home of Denver City. Annie Bell died Monday, October 5th, in Denver City, Texas. Annie Bell was born on November 2nd, 1922, in McDonald, New Mexico, to John and Beulah Garnett. She was preceded in death by her parents, John and Beulah Garnett, her husband, J.T. Tucker, a brother, John E. Garnett, and sister, Cleo R. Chadwick. Annie Bell is survived by her two sons, John D. Tucker and his wife, Charo of Odessa, Billy R. Tucker and his wife, Joan of Euless, one daughter, Shirley J. Jones of Texas City, six grandchildren, 10 great-grandchildren, six great-great-grandchildren. Death notices, Phyllis Lynn Eaton, Odessa. Phyllis Lynn Eaton, 71, of Abilene, Texas, died Tuesday, October 26th, in Odessa. Celebration of life is scheduled for 11 a.m. Thursday, November 4th, at Martinez Funeral Home, Inside Chapel. At the family's request, cremation has been selected as the alternative means of burial. Dr. Jimmy Braswell is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. John Douglas, Doug Miller, Odessa. John Douglas, Doug Miller, 69, of Odessa, died Friday, October 29th, in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 1 p.m., November 5th, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Parks. Pastor Mac Roller is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Nancy Rubio Olivas, Odessa. Nancy Rubio Olivas, 43, of Odessa, Texas, died Monday, November 1st, in Odessa, Texas. Mass will be celebrated at 2 p.m. Friday, November 5th, at St. Joseph's Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Father Mark Woodruff is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa.
These next articles come from the Health and Wellness section of the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, November 3rd, 2021. Our first headline, virus case counts continue to fall. Health officials cautiously optimistic that latest COVID wave is behind us. By Sue Doreen. Midland Health CEO Russell Myers said the reduction in COVID in the community has him feeling cautiously optimistic that the latest wave is over. The COVID numbers include the first 5 days of single-digit COVID reporting totals in more than 2 months, according to the Midland Health Department, 9 straight weeks of declining weekly numbers going back to August 22nd through 28th, the lowest weekly positivity rate last week at Midland Health Testing Centers, 12%, going back to mid-July, and the lowest number of weekly positive COVID cases at Midland Health Testing Centers, 81, going back to late July. Other news include that 65.3% of 248 patient rooms at Midland Memorial Hospital were occupied Tuesday. That is down dramatically since the height of the most recent spike. Also, staff impact at Midland Memorial is down with 3 staff members out and 9 self-monitoring because of exposure. Myers also said Tuesday during a press conference that the number of state resources are down to 29 workers and that they will be gone by the end of the month. We continue to be quite dependent on very high costs, traveling contract nurses, and respiratory therapists, Myers said. We expect that probably will be the case through the winter as our staff has been somewhat depleted. Myers added Tuesday that the number of COVID inpatients is 30, 21 active and 9 convalescing. He also reminded those watching the press conference that the hospital still is dealing with a high number of COVID-related deaths, 31 in October and 2 in November. There have been 99 COVID-related patient deaths at Middlemore Hospital since the beginning of August. We still have people at the hospital with COVID, Miser said, so any optimism we have is cautious, but it does appear that this surge is running its course. Midland Chief Health Official Officer Dr. Wilson and I were talking yesterday, and he remarked that it's hard to believe at this point, as contagious as the Delta variant was, that there's anybody in the community who hasn't had some level of exposure, either through vaccination or through infection. And so the vast majority of our community has some level of antibody protection. So it's not too surprising this variant would run its course and the community would begin to recover. Myers also said that Midland health officials are concerned about the upcoming winter and the typical respiratory viruses like the flu and RSV. Just because we have been mostly talking about COVID for 2 years, that doesn't mean the flu isn't real, Myers said. Influenza kills people every year, not in the kind of numbers that COVID has seen, but it attacks the same populations, the vulnerable, the chronically ill. So if you haven't gotten your flu shot, you've got a great opportunity to do that right now and keep yourself well through the flu season. And hopefully continue our return to normalcy here in Midland and around the country. Our next article is titled, Midland Health to Distribute New Pediatric Vaccines, by Stuart Durham. Midland Health is planning the distribution of pediatric vaccines for those who want them. Midland Health CEO Russell Myers said Tuesday that first dosages of Pfizer will be ready for those ages 5 to 11, most likely beginning Monday. He said it is the Pfizer vaccine that has been available for those 12 and up for several months. Myers said that these will be pediatric doses and that Midland Health is waiting for final word from the CDC and FDA about final approvals about the administration of the vaccine. That guidance is expected this week. Myers said Monday Midland Health will partner with the Community Children's Clinic, 1101 East Front Street. One reason, he said, is because the vaccine for children is a different dosage than the vaccine given to adults. So it's important that we separate those administration processes to ensure that we're handling pediatric doses in pediatric settings. We're planning to do that every Monday afternoon for at least 6 weeks, beginning this coming Monday, November 8th, Myers said. That will be happening from 3 p.m. to 4:45 p.m. In the short run, at least initially, we're going to be doing this on an appointment basis. He said more details, including on how to make an appointment, will appear on Midland Health's Facebook page. Making an appointment will be necessary, he said, because the clinic is relatively small and Midland Health officials don't want to overcrowd that facility. You can also check with your children's medical provider, pediatrician, family medical doctor, said Myers, who added that he would expect multiple clinics for vaccinations once pediatric approvals take place. Our next article is titled, Cigarette Sales Rise for the First Time in Two Decades, by Aaron Gregg of the Washington Post. New government data shows that sales of cigarettes and smokeless tobacco products increased last year for the first time in two decades, raising concerns that pandemic-related stress spurred an uptick in smoking. Sales of the addictive, cancer-causing products have been trending downward for three decades amid an array of government anti-smoking programs. The largest U.S. cigarette producers sold an estimated 203.7 billion cigarettes to wholesalers and retailers in 2020, representing an increase of about 800 million over 2019, according to an annual report released Tuesday by the Federal Trade Commission. Sales of smokeless tobacco products, such as chewing tobacco, also increased slightly to 126.9 million, according to a parallel FTC report. FTC figures released Tuesday do not include e-cigarettes, aerosol-based cigarettes, also known as vape pens. The FTC issued subpoenas for e-cigarette sales data in mid-February, but has yet to publish data on them. The CDC has reported that 14.2% of adults over the age of 18 smoked cigarettes as of 2019, and 4.4% used e-cigarettes. The new FTC data suggests more Americans turned to cigarettes last year amid the stress of a fractured economy and a once-in-a-generation public health crisis. Erica Sward, Assistant Vice President of Advocacy for the American Lung Association, called the FTC numbers very troubling.
First xenotransplanted kidney is a big leap forward. The story was written by Carol A. Cates, Chief Nursing Officer, Odessa Regional Medical Center. I have a photo of my dad that I think about a great deal when it comes to advances in medical technology. That picture was taken in 1943 when my dad was three. Sitting next to my dad in this picture is one of my aunts, Gertrude Ann. She was about 18 months old. Unfortunately, I have never met Gertrude Ann because she died a week after that picture was taken. She died of croup. My dad made my brothers and I learn CPR at an early age because of Gertrude Ann. He said, quote, "If your grandparents or anyone else in the house had known CPR, Gertrude Ann wouldn't have died," end quote. Unfortunately, in 1943, no one knew CPR. It didn't exist. My list is much longer than my dad's on the if we had knowns that could have saved Gertrude Ann. Antibiotics, ventilators, cricothyroidotomies, the EMS system, 911, none of those existed back then. Any of them could have made a huge difference for her. Since their invention, those technologies have saved millions of lives. Gertrude Ann is why I get so excited when medicine takes a big leap forward, because I know firsthand the positive impact that medical advances make on patients and their families. You may have seen in the news over the last few days another big leap forward. The successful transplantation of a pig kidney into a human being. Xenotransplantation is the term used for organ transplant between species. This is not the first time we have tried xenotransplantation between pigs and humans, or other animals and humans. There have been several failed attempts since as early as the 17th century to use animal blood and organs to save humans. To date, the longest surviving attempt was in 1984, when, in a desperate attempt to save the life of an infant, baby Faye, doctors transplanted a baboon heart into her at 12 days old. She survived for an additional 21 days, but eventually the heart rejected and failed, and baby Faye died. Since then, the work has focused mostly on pig organs, because we do use pigs successfully for many other medical advances, like medications like heparin, tissues like heart valves, other tissues like pig skin is used in burn treatment, and in some countries, pig corneas are used for transplant to restore sight. Pigs are also numerous, and they reproduce rapidly. The reason until now that pig organs haven't worked well is there is sugar in pig cells that basically causes instant rejection of any organ transplanted from a pig. That sugar, or more accurately, the elimination of that sugar, is what has made this one surgery work. The genes in the pig that donated the kidney were edited so the pig didn't produce that sugar. Once they successfully were able to eliminate the sugar, they started looking for a human recipient. But, unlike with baby Faye, this group of scientists did not want to decide based on desperation, and they didn't want to take the risk of someone losing their life. So they approached a family who had a loved one who was brain dead and wanted to donate their organs for transplant. But unfortunately, that person's organs were not viable for donation. They asked if they could transplant the kidney from their gene-edited pig and see if it would work. The family consented. The pig kidney was transplanted into the brain-dead person, and they observed both the kidney and the person for 2 days. After 2 days, there was no sign of rejection, and the kidney worked well. They limited it to 2 days because pig kidneys reject almost instantly in attempts done decades ago, and so they could also let the family who allowed for the transplant experiment on their loved one lay that person to rest. That it worked is a big step in a very positive direction. But there is still a great deal more research to be done before this is something we could do routinely. Each year, there are 100,000 people in the U.S. alone waiting for a kidney transplant, but there are only about 21,000 organs available for transplant each year. That means about 12 people in the U.S. die every day waiting for a kidney transplant. This technology could save so many people. If we could expand that out to hearts, livers, lungs, pancreas, and all the other organs we transplant, the number of lives saved would be enormous. It is very exciting to think about.
Vascular congestion can give feet a bruised appearance. Dear Dr. Roach, I am a 70-year-old woman in excellent health. For the past few years, I have had a creeping, bloody discoloration of my feet, starting at my ankles and going toward my toes. When you touch one of my feet, it is momentarily normal, but quickly goes back to looking bloody, even sometimes purple. For the past year and a half, I am also experiencing edema of my ankles and feet. I have no heart issues and have had an endovascular doctor do testing on my veins and arteries. Everything is flowing like it should. My primary care, cardiologist and endovascular doctors, find nothing wrong and have no explanation for my symptoms, which continues to persist. Any ideas? LS. Answer. A foot or any part of a foot that turns blue and cold suddenly is a surgical emergency. It usually means that a major artery is blocked either by blood clot or by cholesterol plaque. That's not what you have, but I understand why you are concerned about the appearance of the foot. I suspect your problem is vascular congestion, which is commonly seen in both men and women in their 70s. Usually associated with foot swelling due to leaky valves in the veins. The swelling constricts the network of very small blood vessels, causing the foot to look alarmingly blue, as in your case. Arterial testing That's what your vein specialist did, is normal. Fortunately, as alarming as it looks, it is not dangerous. Elevate your feet for 10 minutes or so at least 3 times daily. In addition, light compression stockings worn daily will help with the swelling, which is why the blood has pooled in the feet.
Here is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter Telegram on Thursday, November 4th. Marriage sours as details spill out for all to see. Dear Abby, my husband of 16 years has been airing our dirty laundry to anyone who will listen, including my 35-year-old son. We live in a small town and have lots of ties here. People who were once quick to come up and say hi no longer do so. In fact, most are avoiding me by heading in the opposite direction in the stores or in parking lots. I have asked my husband to keep our business between us and not discuss our personal lives with others, but he continues to do it anyway. His mother is the go-to for him, and she has now canceled our Saturday outings. I'm so disgusted by all of this that I want to end the marriage. The home we live in is mine. I paid in full for it before I met him, and it is all I have. I have asked him to leave, but he refuses, saying he's going to, quote, take me for everything and more, unquote. Should I hire an attorney at the risk of possibly making things worse, or wait until things calm down? Signed, Afraid and Confused in California. Dear Afraid, do not wait for things to calm down. In light of what your husband has threatened, it is extremely important that you start talking to lawyers about what's going on and how to protect yourself. Talk to several because you can gain a wider perspective. While you may not be able to salvage your reputation in that community because of what your husband has been spreading, you will be able to prevent him from fleecing you. Please accept my sympathy. Dear Abby, I have a good friend who wants to help everyone. She has been in a relationship with a man for 25 years. She does not get along with his 40-something-year-old son, who lives with and mooches off his dad. He also has his 8-year-old grandson living there. Because her boyfriend has always promised marriage, she hangs on. The son is a drug addict and not supposed to be around the grandson, but everyone enables everyone. My friend finally moved out a few years ago, but she is back again. The boyfriend is now battling cancer and has her there to help the grandson with online learning and to take care of all three of them, cleaning, laundry, grocery shopping, rides to doctors, and cooking. Her boyfriend is retired now and has a lot of money, and his house is paid off. She's 63 and thinks if he dies, she'll get a portion of his estate, but he won't put anything in writing. I keep telling her she's a fool and he won't change. Is she wasting the golden years of her life? Signed, Involved Friend in Minnesota. Dear Involved, yep, the boyfriend has her exactly where he wants her, as a source of free labor and with no guarantee about her future. If it is security she's hoping for, I regretfully agree that she's wasting the golden years of her life.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.